This episode is presented by Total Food Service. Total Food Service delivers the restaurant and food service industry's most comprehensive package of news and information. Offered in print and digitally on totalfood.com, you'll receive the latest on the new normal.
Hello and welcome to Hungry Society. I'm Quisha Wilson and this is a show where we talk about food, food media, and so much more. Today's show is an interview with CEO of Hot Bread Kitchen, Shaoli Sen. Hot Bread Kitchen is based here in New York, and it's a fantastic organization that creates economic opportunity through careers in food. So that looks like their amazing culinary incubator for food businesses and their training program that they host for women who want to have jobs in culinary arts. I wanted to talk to Shaoli about the unique challenges that women-run and immigrant-run businesses face during the COVID crisis. The conversation you're going to hear is emotional and raw, and Shaoli and I both shed tears at one point. I'm so grateful that I had the opportunity to chat with Shaoli about the ways in which Hot Bread Kitchen has reorganized itself to be the most helpful to their participants. And I'm so glad that we could have a bit of fun at the end of the interview and talk about having daiquiris on the beach. I hope you like this conversation, and I hope you will think about supporting Hot Bread Kitchen by visiting their website, hotbreadkitchen.org, and I hope that you'll think about how you can support immigrant-run and women-run businesses in your communities. Thank you so much, and I'll catch you soon. Shaoli, it's so good to be on the show with you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So as I said in the intro, Hot Bread Kitchen is a culinary training facility and an incubator, but I'm wondering in your own words how you describe the work of Hot Bread Kitchen to people who maybe aren't familiar.
Sure. Well, for 10 years, we've been in the business of training women for good jobs in the food industry. And we've also been running our own small business incubator kitchen to help bring minority-owned and women-owned food businesses to market.
It's amazing. And the breads that I've had are just, they're so tasty and so flavorful. And I'm wondering how this crisis has impacted the work of Hot Bread Kitchen.
Well, it's basically turned us upside down. We had to pause and pivot on multiple levels. The first and immediate was to stop everything we were doing and kind of turn our organization into an emergency relief effort program. So we started to provide cash assistance to support the gap between losing a paycheck and accessing unemployment for all the women that we had placed in our jobs over the last couple of years. And then we started offering stipends to small businesses while they kind of figured out their game plan of how they were going to change their business or close their business temporarily or permanently and figure out a longer term plan for their income since everything came to a halt so suddenly. And, you know, the businesses of the size that we work with in our incubator kitchen, they're very small. So access to things like the payroll protection program and the first round of stimulus has been very difficult and impossible for them to access. So along with all of these changes, we had to kind of become experts in topics of unemployment insurance and small business lending, and really changed what we were doing on a regular basis to becoming more of a direct social service organization for this time period now. And, you know, really redefining what success was. And, you know, in just as early as February, success was getting a woman through our culinary training program, placing them in a job, or seeing a small business grow its sales. And now our success is just getting as many people onto unemployment insurance as quickly as we can and getting a check in their hands to cover groceries and bills while they're waiting to get through this system.
I love that phrase that you just used, like redefining success. The idea of like a 10-year-old organization having to redefine success for the participants of this program within like a matter of weeks, it sounds so daunting. Like it sounds like it, I do you even approach that? I mean, I know the team of Hot Bread Kitchen is amazing, but you know, how as an organization do you even approach like kind of shifting and being adaptable to this crisis?
Right. It's been a true exercise in kind of flexibility and, you know, changing everything, even our own operations, the way we communicate. We're a kitchen-based business. We don't really spend a lot of time in front of a computer or at our desks. And that's what we're doing now, working remotely, shifting that kind of physical presence to talking to people on the phone constantly or texting with them. So we had to really push that flexibility and that adaptability of the team to get this response out. And it's been incredibly rewarding for the team because they've been able to see the immediate impact of getting our cash assistance out. And it gave us something very singular to focus on that seemed like the most urgent and the most necessary. I think the harder part is the phase that we're going into now, which is planning for the next time horizon of the next 4 to 6 months. Nothing that we planned for the year makes any sense anymore. You know, we were planning to place over 100 women in new jobs this year. We were planning to accept a lot of new businesses into our growing facilities and grow our kitchen incubator. But we're having to, you know, recalibrate all those priorities. First, we're going to have to just get women back to work who've already been through our program and already had jobs. And then we're going to have to figure out, you know, the handful of businesses that are still producing and surviving this time, how we continue to support them to help the hospital and frontline food delivery efforts and move into more delivery models. So it's just trying to reimagine how we support the population that we've actually been supporting already instead of growing it. And getting them secure and stable before we kind of turn to the wider population in New York of how we can, you know, figuring out how we can support them. Right now it's, you know, working with the small businesses, it's just providing guidance to them and helping them figure out financial planning for themselves, for their families, and how they would even come back into the food sector if they can mentally and financially afford to do so. In many ways, the mission seems just as critical as it was before, which is to provide the economic opportunity through the careers and food. But how we go about doing that, you know, it has to change completely. And that's what we're in the starting time of figuring out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you actually brought up something I wanted to talk to you about, which is the initiative that Hot Bread Kitchen launched to feed restaurant workers. And, you know, in addition to pivoting to provide like immediate assistance and relief, you've also pivoted to feed a really vulnerable part of the community, which it has always been like a big part of Hot Bread Kitchen and why it's so wonderful as an organization, but it's taken on a completely different meaning and during this time. So I'm wondering if you could talk about that.
Yes. From the beginning of the crisis, many of the businesses in our incubator really wanted to serve the frontline workers and serve the hospital workers. When we shut down the kitchen for a week, right when we opened back up, we had a couple of our businesses who wanted to provide care for the hospital workers. So a longtime member of our kitchen, Jinjin Juices, they're two brothers who own the company. They're immigrants from Guinea, and they make these West African ginger pineapple juices. And immediately they came in to produce a batch to deliver to hospitals. We also had Janie Bakes, who recently won the Food Network's Chopped Sweets contest. She came in immediately to bake her pie crust cookies. So from the beginning inside of our kitchen and with the community of the small businesses that cook there, there was this immediate desire to turn around their production and just provide support and care and relief. And then from there, we had more sophisticated businesses that had a production line that could help actually produce many meals a day. And we connected with the hospital system to start providing 4,500 meals a week. That's currently being provided by two of our businesses. One is a Venezuelan family-owned bakery, Pabade, and another is Little Green Gourmet, which is a woman-owned business who makes nutritious food for schools. And they were able to come back into the kitchen, bring back their workers, and create a safe production line that could get a lot of meals out to the hospitals for as little as $6 a meal. And then we've had philanthropic support to support that effort and get the businesses up and running to provide the meal supply that's needed right now.
That's really amazing. It's like even as business for themselves has become like even more precarious and the future like more uncertain, it's still like, okay, how do I help? How do I provide for others through food?
Exactly.
Yeah, I guess that like impulse and desire drives people to start food businesses in the first place. It's just, it's been really incredible to see so many people in the food space like step up to provide for others, even as the ground underneath them is so rocky and shaky, and nobody knows what the future will look like for the food industry.
Exactly. I think it's back to that. This is the thing that we can do now that we know will make a difference. And I think for many, it's just figuring out how they can help and how they can provide support. And of course, when you're a food business owner, that's the first, you know, first responder instinct in you.
Yes, absolutely.
This episode is presented by Total Food Service. Total Food Service delivers the restaurant and food service industry's most comprehensive package of news and information. From day one of the COVID-19 crisis to today, the focus of Total Food Service has been to listen to the needs of their restaurant and food service readers. They were stunned by the endless stream of heartwarming stories. Restaurants everywhere were stepping up to feed hospitality workers and first responders while nimbly converting to takeout and delivery options. Total Food Service coverage has now moved to the planning forward stage. Offered in print and digitally at totalfood.com, you'll receive the latest on the new normal. Need answers and solutions? Find them at totalfood.com.
So what are some of the like unique challenges that either alumni of the program face, or, you know, people who are going to be part of the incubator program or culinary training program? What are some of the challenges they're facing right now?
Yes. On both sides of the small business owners and the graduates of our culinary program who are in the workforce, really what's happening is that the lack of the safety nets that the crisis is exposing is very real and very scary. That was the reason that we turned to cash assistance right away. You know, for those who are seeking unemployment, and now some small business owners are eligible to do so because of this crisis, where before they weren't, you know, just accessing benefits of any kind is harder than ever. The systems are very overwhelmed. We have many women in our program without access to computers and have to call into a phone line and wait 3 or 4 hours and still not get through to anyone. They don't necessarily understand what they qualify for. The system is opaque and the communications are very limited. There's not a lot of translation services that are consistent, and all of the written communication is in English. So we have many foreign language speakers who are just confused by the process. And for example, we had someone who was actually denied cash assistance by a representative because she was told she had too many children. It seems like there's,
wow.
Yes, there's, it seems you know, the system is in such upheaval, as you've seen the numbers rising, being able to cope with this level of scale of applications and the variety of people who really need a lot of support is just, you know, crashing at so many levels. We've had women who used to get, SNAP, the food assistance benefits, but now can't refill their card until their unemployment application is processed. So there was no setup for how all these systems and all these benefits connect together and how one can impact the other in this type of a moment. And that's created lots of real gaps in food access and just cash access. And the problem is that food security is really top of mind for all of the women that we talk to who have been laid off. And in addition to just securing groceries, just the act of shopping for food is, you know, they're filled with fear and dread of it. We've talked to people who have very few groceries at home, but was afraid to go outside and wasn't sure if the stores were open. She had heard that stores were charging more for staple items. So a lot of lack of, you know, real communication and information. So that's another gap that we're trying to fill. And I think that the hardest part is the difficult choices that people are making. So there's some of our program graduates and alumni who are still employed, particularly in the some of the grocery sector, and they don't qualify for the new unemployment insurance, so they have to kind of make that choice of showing up to work. And the reality is that the work conditions are not consistently safe for workers. We have people in small groceries with tight spaces with not any possibility of distancing. We've had women tell us that the customers are being treated better than the workers and that the safety protocols are very inconsistent. And then I think the thing that I didn't realize, because I've been privileged enough to stay at home during this time, is that the lack of the changes in the MTA and the subway system in cutting service has actually created more crowds on the subway. So a woman told us that her subway is crowded at 8 p.m. when she gets off of work. And so that the ripple effect of some of these cuts in services.
So counterintuitive. Exactly. Because people should be distancing and wow.
Exactly. Yes. So that's been the immediate impact on the workforce alumni, and of course now we're getting into the phase of, you know, what happens next and how long is this going to go on, and that's what we're trying to work with them to figure out now, because there are jobs available in certain sectors of food, but it comes with a risk. All of our women are mothers, so they have children at home right now. So without school opening, it becomes very hard to figure out how you even go back to work. And that's where we are at the moment. And then for our small business owners, of course, they're just trying to figure out what they can lean on during this time, whether it's a spouse in the household or family members or any savings if they have, or you know, just taking an alternative job and trying to have some level of income. And then, of course, there's some who've been able to pivot temporarily to this delivery-based model or serving the front line. But what we worry about is the economics of that and how long that's going to be sustainable. Many of our small business owners are just, you know, trying to hold on to some level of sales. But as this continues, you know, it's going to be difficult to assess, you know, how long they'll be able to keep the business open and at what cost, because it's not the same level, obviously, that they were operating before. So the income is really severely compromised.
Yeah, it's, you know, I wanted to have you on the show because this has been a long time coming. I love Hot Bread Kitchen, but also because I think a lot of the overwhelming narrative of, you know, isolating and quarantine is like, you have time to cook and you're at home. Yes. And that's just not the reality for a lot of people. And your neighbors, even, you know, as you said, like, people are at home with children and, you know, no childcare and have to lean on family members or spouses. And, you know, I think the realities of the, not just the economic impact, but like the social impact as well, aren't just like baking bread and making pasta. It's, you know, it looks very, very difficult for a lot of people that are in our communities.
That's exactly right. I think we're all struggling by seeing that in just, you know, the inequity is showing up in how people are able to cope with the crisis. And exactly, there aren't hours available or space available to devote to cooking or for what's being called free time or self-improvement time. Mostly what we're seeing are people are just scared and overwhelmed and really just is struggling to manage in this isolation in very tight quarters and under unusual circumstances with family members that they technically, historically haven't spent so much time with in this way, and having no other vehicle to, you know, make an income and really solve a step towards a solution. They're feeling like very much like their hands are tied right now, and it's a very difficult place to be.
Yeah. So what can listeners do to help? What can listeners do to support Hapridge Kitchen and the participants of the program?
Certainly, if you have the means, donate. The money that we're raising for these relief efforts just go out the door in the form of stipends for the women and small business owners and the people that we're describing. They support our hotline that we're running for all food workers to help them access unemployment. So they can donate at hotbreadkitchen.org/donate. Spreading the word about the work that we're doing and even hosting a fundraiser. So maybe taking a break from all the cooking to see if you can get together with some friends and do a peer-to-peer campaign and raise some money that way and give back that way. The other thing is definitely being an advocate for essential workers and food business owners and food workers. If you are going to the store or getting delivery, making sure that your workers are being treated as well as customers and have access to the safety protocols that we are, you know, coming to realize should be standard. I think that's really important. And if you work at a company that has a foundation or giving program, you know, encouraging the leaders to give generously. I work with foundations who have advanced us large sums of money, you know, very quickly with very limited questions because they know that we're doing the right thing. We're just trying to save people's livelihoods. I think I've worked with others that are being more conservative and just giving us money that they had planned to give us later in the year up front as if that's going to solve the emergency. But that's really not the answer. This is the time to be really generous and go above and beyond, just like the frontline workers and the hospital workers and the essential food workers are. So, you know, I think it's important to know how people are reacting to this funding that we're able to get out to them. So I'll just share a couple of the comments that we've gotten in text from our alumni workers. One woman said, you know, thank you from the soul. I was very worried because I have the burden of rent, but I have received your help and I'm sure everything will be okay. Another woman told us that knowing that I will be able to chip away at some bills now instead of remaining frozen in the fear has made me all the more grateful than I can possibly express. And one other woman shared, I'm so extremely humbled with gratitude for being included in your incredible efforts for this stipend. The funds reached my account today, and it was literally like a burst of light shone amidst this whole ugly process. And that's the type of feedback that we're getting. So these dollars really do matter, and they really are getting to the people who need them the most.
Oh, that's it's overwhelming. The text that you just read from people of, you know, how much. Wow, thank you for reading those. I just even hearing them is overwhelming for me. I can't imagine receiving them and doing this work. It must be very, very difficult at this time.
I read these texts a few times now and it makes me cry every time.
So. We're gonna take a quick break and we'll be right back with more with Shelley Sen of Hapridge Kitchen. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good. Okay. All right. So we are back with Shali Sen, CEO of Hot Bread Kitchen. And so at this point in the show, I usually talk to my guests about the relationship they've had with dining throughout the course of their life. And to be completely honest with you, it's felt more and more frivolous as the weeks have gone on. But I do want to hear about you and, you know, do you have any like wonderful food memories from growing up?
Yeah. I don't think it's frivolous because thinking about these things, just it is a nice break from what we're facing now. And thinking about memories of food definitely takes me to a happy place. So I think there is some value in that. I've been thinking so much about New York and food, obviously, as we all have, and what it looks like and what it used to look like. And it just made me think a lot about how much I love the city. And growing up in Central Jersey, actually, my parents loved coming to New York on a regular basis, you know, 1 to 3 times a week for music, plays, theater, movies, and mainly restaurants. And I'm Bengali, and in my family, food is the dominating topic of conversation and activity. If we're inside the house or outside, it doesn't matter where we are. So we used to spend a lot of time in the West Village. I remember lots of paella in Spanish restaurants because we would bring huge groups of friends and share that together. And my dad always had his nose in a Zagat's guide trying to figure out the perfect balance of ambiance, food, and price point for us to go out. So I still hate to admit that I can't go into a restaurant without looking up its reviews. And this was well before the plethora of review sites. So
that's amazing. Do you remember any of the names of those places that you would go to?
I do. I have this favorite memory of this small brunch spot in the West Village, I think close to Meatpacking before it was Meatpacking. It was. I remember the name because I thought it was so romantic. Anglers and Writers. I don't know if you remember it. It was this.
I've definitely heard of it.
Yeah. I think the restaurateur still has some new restaurants. But it was this bright and airy kind of whimsical brunch place. And I remember we were driving in for brunch. It must have been a Sunday morning, listening to jazz on the radio for the whole hour drive in from Jersey and parking on these cobblestone streets there. And it just turned this, you know, rainy day into this cozy, fun one. And I remember always asking my parents to go back there and being really sad. I think it closed after 9/11. And that memory, you know, the idea of going to brunch is just something that I grew up with and loving to this day. It feels so decadent and lazy and special to have a meal that only exists on the weekend.
Right. Yeah, it does feel like indulgence. Yes. To go out for eggs at 2 p.m.
Exactly. And drink. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of places in New York have a bottomless brunch, which
yes.
is very indulgent and gets crazy for sure.
I definitely took advantage of that in my early 20s. I have many memories of bottomless brunches.
Oh, that's amazing. So, yeah, I usually ask my guests about their last meal, but I think I'm going to switch that question up and, you know, what's your dream sort of dinner party? If you could plan just like the perfect meal, like who would be there? What are you eating? What are you drinking?
Anywhere, right? I've right. been thinking a little bit about escaping in my mind since it's not clear when you can travel again freely. But I've been thinking about returning to India with my family. We were just there in December, actually. And the next time I'd like to go, go back to a beach in Kerala and sit at a beachfront hotel with them. They have very large shrimp in the south of India, marinated in these Indian spices. And just thinking of sitting on the beach with that cocktail and the sound of the waves and the fire pit. And who you asked who would be with me. I think I'd really just like to be by myself and and know that my children and husband are back in the hotel napping somewhere. But just sitting there and being able to hear the sounds and eat the food and you know, use all five senses and not be distracted by anything, even conversation, seems like a luxury, really. And it seems very peaceful right now.
Mm. Yeah, I love that, you know, your husband and children are close by.
But, you know,
it's self-care time, like me time on the beach with amazing shrimp. That sounds great. And what's the cocktail you're drinking?
Oh, something frivolous and beachy, maybe. Like, you know, what is that? Like tequila sunrise or something like that, yes. The sweet stuff goes well with the Indian spices.
Nice. That sounds absolutely wonderful right now. Well, I know you have a lot to do, and I'm so grateful that you took the time to talk with me this morning. And I'm so glad that listeners get to hear about the amazing work that you're doing at Hot Pot Kitchen and the ways that they can help. I really appreciate you sharing your time.
Thank you. Thank you so much for making time for these difficult conversations on what we're facing. I really appreciate it.
It's so necessary, and it's the only way we get forward is if we have these conversations and hear from one another.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
This program is powered by Simplecast.